Live on Tape, Work in Progress, a World at Work podcast about work, life, and everything in between. With award-winning radio host Tom Alexander and Workspan's Not Safe for Work columnist Charles Epstein. Here are your hosts, Tom and Charles.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Work in Progress. My name is Tom Alexander, and as always, I'm joined by my good friend and podcast partner. It is Charles Epstein. Hey, Charles.
Hey, Tom. Today, we're going to be speaking with none other than our pal, David Foote.
Yeah, David Foote, chief analyst and co-founder of the eponymous Foote Partners. He's a tech research analyst and innovator of advanced techniques for benchmarking enterprise tech jobs, skill supply demand, and compensation. Tracking, forecasting tech labor trends, and analyzing human factors in technology development. Wow, that is a mouthful. I think we need a scorecard.
As Bill Maher would say, my former job.
Yeah. We actually need footnotes for that one, I think.
And actually, this will be David's third appearance, a three-peat. I don't know, Tom, do we have to pay residuals or something like that to Pat Riley anytime we use 3P? How does that work?
Yeah, I think so. I think David will have a little something coming in the mail.
Pat will get, of course,
he gets a cut of everything David makes from here on out, I guess.
Yeah.
Is that how that works?
This may be the last appearance that David Foote makes on this show now that he knows that he's going to have to. But then again, it's only 3-peat. It's not 4-peat. I don't think, Riley sticks his hand in your pocket anytime you go past the 3-peat.
I think it's
just a 3-peat that he's got trademarked. Anyway, the challenge with David is reining him in because he's always bursting with info, awash with data, but it's always very informative. He's always got interesting things to say about, how tech companies around the world are using technology, how they'll be using it in the next 2 to 3 years, hot tech skills, and more. So we're really looking forward to speaking with David.
Very much so. David Foote next, right here on Work in Progress. Stay tuned.
Data, the mantra of business today. It's nothing new to World at Work. It's no small feat that they've been collecting data on salary issues for its salary budget survey for more than 45 years. Think about it, 45 years. Curious to know how your company stacks up? HR execs in the know rely on World at Work's salary budget survey. Shouldn't you too? Go to worldatwork.org/salarybudgetsurvey to learn more.
Chief analyst and co-founder of Foote Partners, where he also heads up their research group. David is a tech research analyst and innovator of advanced techniques for benchmarking enterprise tech jobs, skill supply demand, and compensation, tracking, forecasting tech labor trends, and analyzing human factors in technology development. He's a former Gartner analyst, Silicon Valley executive, and management consultant working with C-level business and technology management on the tech business axis. He joins us today from Black Rock, Connecticut. David, welcome back to Work in Progress for what I believe is your third appearance.
Tough Three's a charm.
Three is a charm. Absolutely. Thanks for joining us again. Please say hi to my podcast partner, Charles Epstein.
Hey, Charles.
Hey, David. Good to have you on the pod again. You are one of our favorite guests, given your well-honed raconteurial chops. I'm not sure that's a word. Is that a word?
Raconteurial? It is now.
It is now. I got to check that out. I got to go to GoDaddy, raconteurial.com. That would be kind of a cool URL to grab. But, you know, entrepreneur, raconteur, sort of a mesh between the two. Anyway, yeah, too bad we won't be seeing you in Phoenix, David, as we won't be attending, unfortunately. But we should be at the TR show in Atlanta next year. So hopefully you'll be there.
I'm going to miss you guys in Phoenix. It's just good to get out of the house. You know, I think a lot of people might be going to their first conference, you know.
I think you're right. You know, speaking of, you know, David, the last time we spoke, you know, about all the info and insights you typically glean through your travels around the world, you know, on technology and skills trends. And obviously the pandemic has put a crimp on those travel plans. How has that affected your work?
Well, I wear two hats here. One is as a manager and executive running the company, and the other is leading the research organization. So in the first hat, it hasn't changed anything. I mean, we launched 24 years ago as a virtual company, and, you know, we don't have any, you know, I don't think there's more than two people at any location, and usually one person. And so we've been managing through. We were actually a beta test site for WebEx, as I recall. So we've been at it, you know, for over a decade. But as a research person, I get a lot of information. I think more information, better information when I'm physically in a room with somebody asking them questions than if I'm doing it through Zoom or even a telephone call. So I do miss the interaction. And also, one of the things we do is we're trying to look at adoption of technology and how companies are managing their people. You know, in Shanghai versus Orlando, Florida, you know, versus, you know, Berlin, Germany versus Delhi, India. And it's really, it's hard to get those distinctions if I'm not able to travel to those countries and talk to people there. So, yeah, you know, I do miss that as a researcher, but, I think again, because we've sort of managed this company virtually, I think we figured out a pretty good way, a backup model for how to do our research when we're not traveling. And so we're able to pull, you know, we're going to be talking about information and insights today that we pull from almost 4,000 research partners of ours. So we have a very online relationship with them in a lot of ways. So, you know, I think we haven't suffered that much, but I do miss being able to look at the body language as people speak, you know, gives you more of the emotional content and the unconscious part of what they're consciously talking about. I guess that's the best way to put it.
Yeah, no, for sure. Which actually leads me to my next question. In our conversations leading up to this interview, you've mentioned that COVID has actually been a boon for some companies. How so?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's very obvious some of the industries that have benefited from this, you know, shipping and logistics, online retailers, and a lot of sort of dot-coms in niche areas. I think consulting and professional services really benefited because companies were shedding a lot of workers during this time. As you know, there was a recession as well, as you recall. Mm-hmm. And they were hiring consultants and contractors. And of course, the information technology industry has benefited, you know, quite a bit. Banking and finance, you know, all these skyrocketing online purchases and increased digital transaction driven credit card usage, but also they were processing all the PPP loans, all the unemployment checks were going right into accounts. I think large healthcare probably benefited a lot. Government, yes, defense and law enforcement too, because, you know, you're fighting bad guys that have really good technology and you have to fight back. So I think the cybersecurity risks increased. Right. We'll talk about that increased quite a bit during the pandemic.
Well, as you know, David, as the expression goes, the only way to stop a bad guy with technology is for a good guy to have technology. Yeah, it makes sense. I think you would also mention in previous conversations, education also has benefited. How so?
Well, I don't think they were quite set up for an online model, you know, unless you're one of these, you know, online universities, Trump University. But if you were a classroom-based educational model and you had to move very quickly to a remote model, I don't think a lot of colleges and institutes were set up do that. So they had to move very, very quickly in terms of their their network operations and engineering and all kinds of stuff, and cloud, you know, doing stuff in the cloud.
So that was primarily the reason for the failure of Trump University. They weren't able to make this transition.
Yes, of course. Okay. But there's one other, area. I think curiously, and in a purely, you know, counterintuitive fashion, I think a number of small independent restaurants benefited from this. We keep hearing on how like something like 4,000 or 5,000 restaurants and small businesses went out of business in New York City. But I eat lunch with a friend of mine. We have a monthly lunch, and it was a very small Italian restaurant in Westport, Connecticut. And they told us that their business benefited tremendously through takeout. They didn't do a lot of takeout. Now they were doing, and they were serving more meals as a takeout restaurant than they ever did as a sit down restaurant. So, you know, I think most people wouldn't think that, but even a lot of small businesses, you wouldn't think benefited did.
Okay. Well, that's interesting from the standpoint of the specific industries and how they responded. Is there anything more universal where COVID has forced companies again on a broader scale to innovate, or what does it force them generally to do?
Well, I think, you know, COVID was a major digital technology accelerant, and it forced a lot of changes. I mean, the pandemic absolutely speeded up the adoption of digital technology by several years, and many of these changes could be here for the long haul. I mean, direct digital transformation investment is predicted to grow at almost a 16% compound annual growth rate from last year to 2023 to almost $7 trillion. And you can understand why the e-commerce share of total retail sales were up 330% in 2020 in the U.S. and even higher in the U.K. and Spain, according to a McKinsey study. I mean, e-commerce sales now amount to 20% of total retail sales across the board in the United States, and it's even higher in places like China and the UK. This has happened in part because of the increase in remote working and collaboration and increasing demand for online purchasing, and how this has changed customer needs and expectations. I mean, companies have really had to up their games in user experience and user interface skills, in particular, but also in migration of assets to the cloud, and of course, paying more attention to cybersecurity threats, to networks, and at the edge on the device level, and data security too, because that's what the bad guys want to get their hands on, data. Organizations are using all kinds of advanced technologies right now in their operations, but also in decision-making. And this has all been accelerated again by several years by COVID. It's not that companies weren't doing it, it's just they really speeded it up. And that's incredibly significant, because we're all trying to adjust to this acceleration right now. And we're going to be talking more about that today.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know if you want to talk to this, David, but the other day in preparing for this, you mentioned Sherwin-Williams, a pretty traditional company, and your opposite number. You've been speaking with her for a number of years. You were kind of surprised that they were starting to embrace things like user experience and more forward thinking, you know, taking from the analog world into the digital realm. And so it sounds to me like that's another pretty interesting indicator of what companies, and I'm assuming that was largely driven by COVID. It sort of moved them from their standard analog processes to embrace more digital processes. Yes.
Well, or for companies who are brick and mortar retailers, you know, there's always been this idea that, you know, if you're a Home Depot or a, you know, Lowe's or something, that if you get a customer in the store, they're going to spend more money because they're going to be buying several things in that basket of theirs. And when they're going online, they're usually looking for one thing. But as I said before, you know, as a percent of total sales, e-commerce is up between 300% and 400% right now, just in the United States. So a number of companies, brick and mortar companies, I mean, I would suggest that Sherwin-Williams might be one of them, were probably using their websites more to define their products, provide information about their products, and not necessarily sell their products online. They want you to come into the store. But, you know, this is all turned upside down now, because people are not going into stores. It was dangerous during COVID. So now, you know, they're much more able to order things online, and companies have really had to up their game knowing this. And everyone's competing against Amazon, too. So you're competing against a big, big player.
Of course.
David, what would you say are one or two technologies that will have the most impact on the way we work and live, say, in the next 2 to 3 years?
You know, it's not one or two technologies, but I think it's how they cluster and how these clusters integrate with each other. And that's how I think the best way to answer that question would be. For instance, you can't really talk about the popularity of edge computing without also talking about the Internet of Things and cloud computing. The same with advanced data analytics, integrating with, you know, artificial intelligence and Internet of Things, because AI will go even more mainstream and a lot deeper as the merging of business intelligence, data analytics, data science, data engineering teams and skill sets become more mature and more hybrid. So in the end, the real driver to all this is how to accelerate monetization of vast data sets through, you know, operationalizing production quality, big data pipelines. You know, but first you have to understand which pipelines for what products, for which customers. And that's where AI can help. And of course, security technologies will be embedded or layered on top of all this, either, you know, through secure coding or whatever. But to answer the question, now that extremely robust spending in last year in 2020 on automation and digital development is starting to flatten, our research is projecting that artificial intelligence, machine learning, and also data analytics will be the two hottest technologies driving the highest corporate tech spending over the next few years for some of the reasons I've mentioned earlier. And it's all about the Benjamins, you know, about money. It requires ruthless, focused execution, particularly at enterprise scale, to generate significant value. And that's all about the people and the skills, you know, they've managed to bring into the mix. And sometimes that's about the Benjamins, too. As you know, there's been a lot of incredible salary action. We'll probably talk about this as we go along. But yeah, some of the pay has gotten astronomical. The other day, we got a call from a customer, and I think it was an AI job, and they said, we just lost somebody because somebody offered them $100,000 more than we're paying them. I said, really? I said, how do you compete? I said, well, they wanted that person. It wasn't just the job title they had. They wanted the unique qualities of that one person. And that $100,000 could have been worth millions to them, because that could have been a real impact worker. But not everyone is an impact worker. But I think those are the two, artificial intelligence and data analytics, going forward for the next couple of years.
Yeah. Well, now for the science fiction portion of the podcast, is there anything we got to cue the right music and, of course, the professor's daughter with the clipboard. Anything mind-blowing looming on the horizon over the next, say, decade that'll change everything?
Over the next decade? Well, you know, to me as a researcher, we're all looking at individual technologies, but I think it's how they, how they work together. It's going to be the unique way over the next, you know, if you want to go out 5 or 10 years, sort of the unique way that all of these technologies come together and conspire to create something we've never witnessed before. The internet is a good example of that. You know, the internet was just this, you know, highway, if you will, but nobody expected that that highway would bring us Google and Amazon, Facebook. I mean, it's amazing. You know, what is it, like 80% of the money in the stock market right now is focused on 5 companies. Is that it? In terms of shareholder value, it's amazing what that created, but nobody saw that coming. But it was all the, you know, confluence of many of hardware and software and the ability to move customers to different ways of doing things. And at the end of the day, it all comes down to, it's not how cool the technology, it's whether you can make money doing it. It's whether people want it. Can you convince people to use this? And it took a long time to convince people to use cell phones and smartphones and to want to buy clothes on the internet when, you know, they like to walk into stores and try them on, you know? I mean, so it, you know, I think that's what is going on. So I wouldn't, you know, answer that question with any one or two technologies, but I'm saying it's going to be interesting, particularly to see how AI and all this incredible data. We're talking about, you know, very soon we'll have a trillion connected devices in the world. Yeah. How all that data that we're collecting, how companies can pull intelligence out of it and make money. And I think we're still in early days.
I'm going to go rogue here for 1 second. What would you say to the advertising executive 10 years ago who said to me, there are no new ideas?
Well, you know, I'd call him a fool.
Thank you.
That's pretty succinct. Now you have your answer to take back to this guy, Tom, because it sounds like you've been thinking about them for quite a while.
Yeah, I have. I have.
Anyway, by the way, David, you mentioned all about the Benjamins. Thank you for implicitly acknowledging our small but growing hip hop audience. And, you know, the last time you were on, we played you on with Zappa's Peaches and Regalia. I think this time we're going to go with the Wu-Tang Clan. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Yes. I wanted to clear with you. All right. Anyway, you know, when talking about AI, I've kiddingly mentioned how impressed I've become with chatbot technology, how it's become more intuitive and naturalistic, even charming and suave. Where do you see AI realistically evolving in the next couple of years?
Well, right now, you know, UX designers, developers, architects have been incredibly popular. So, you know, you're talking about chatbot technology and stuff like that and more intuitive, naturalistic. That's all, you know, user experience stuff. You know, we hear the word user experience and coming out of the mouths of research customers of ours almost every day. And as I mentioned before, even from old line brick and mortar retailers. But, you know, UX UI designers right now, average national salaries average nationally are running between, you know, 90,000 and 141K. And at the very top levels, when we're looking at, say, the Bay Area, we're looking at almost $150,000 to more than $250,000 a year in salary. That's for UX designers. UX developers, $82,000 to $127,000 average nationally, depending on experience level. Top levels are running $136,000 to almost $200,000 a year in salary. And that would, again, be more or less in the Bay Area. And then architects are making even more. So as I mentioned, artificial intelligence and machine learning is one of the two hottest areas driving the highest corporate spending over the next couple of years. It's really about intelligence everywhere. You know, by 2023, I don't know. This is not our data. It might have come out of McKinsey or Gartner. 25% of global 2000 companies by 2023 will acquire at least one AI software startup in order to ensure ownership of IP and a variety of critical tech and business skills. And this is, of course, driven by the goal of embedding intelligence in all of their products and services. So we're talking about intelligent bots that can suggest purchases. We're talking about government and fintech leveraging machine learning for fraud detection, you know, intelligence, defense, social media interactions using machine learning for facial recognition. The commercial tech industry is introducing self-driving cars. We talked about chatbots and other AI applications that's going to, you know, shape our world's future. Also, an intensification in sales tools that capture and automatically upload buyer and seller activity data to CRM systems. They're finally taking sellers out of the data entry game. There's all this stuff in marketing technology, MarTech. It's continuing to gain popularity. It's the idea of
capturing buyer intent and stuff like that.
Well, you know, there's a whole lot going on, and, you know, the idea is, you know, and then there's ML ops, you know, machine learning ops, you know, which can be thought of as DevOps for machine learning. It bridges the gap between data science and operations. It's not a panacea for what has, you know, ailed AI adoption so far, but, you know, ML ops can help automate some of the workflow, such as, you know, data and feature engineering and things like that.
I think you coined a really good phrase here. It's about intelligence everywhere.
That's it. And going back to Tom's question, yeah, over the 10, just think about it, intelligence everywhere over the next 10 years. It's like a science fiction movie. You know, if you really want to, I've often told people as a researcher that if you really want to understand the future, you know, watch a bunch of science fiction movies, because if you go back in the past, some of the movies that we thought were promoting unthinkable things about the future really came true. So, you know, Some of the research I do actually is watching science fiction movies. It gives me an idea of what is possible, because all this stuff seems to be possible.
Particularly
with quantum computing coming forward too. You know, it's amazing.
Yeah, Tom, we got to collaborate on a script, a remake of the blob with a high IQ.
Yeah, I like it.
So look, AI is on the cusp of a tremendous economic impact. It's going to disrupt every industry in the same way software was positioned maybe 30 years ago. The challenge now is how to integrate AI and data products into a company's operations and in their commerce and other products. And so if you're a company that is not considering how its strategy should incorporate AI and how AI might disrupt their industry, then it will only be a matter of time until they find themselves playing catch up with another competitor that has already done this work. See, so that's what this is about. You know, for AI to grow, there needs to be a basic level of literacy in the corporate workforce. Employees don't need to be technologists, but they need to know how to use AI collaboratively. AI is already being used to facilitate, you know, personal performance gains and measurement, particularly in scheduling and collaboration. You know, companies are using AI to monitor their workforce on an hour to hour basis. My daughter is monitored 24/7 in the work, not 24/7, but during the workday on her job, and her performance is evaluated according to, you know, they're looking at her keystrokes, you know, they're looking at what she does on the job to do her work and inferring whether this is productive or not. It's very interesting, but, you know, there will be differences by enterprise size in all of this. AI drivers, you know, place a premium on tech talent, no matter what the size of the company or the enterprise. You know, you need to hire people with a lot of basic AI skills, because you're going to need a lot more of them. You're going to have to grow them going forward.
Yeah. By the way, that anecdote about your daughter, they're monitoring her keystrokes. Tom, I know you'll appreciate this. I'm sure you've heard the anecdote before. I think it had to do with Louis B. Mayer, how he'd walk by the writer's bungalows and he'd cock his ear waiting for the clatter of typewriters. He wasn't happy if he didn't hear the thunder of typewriters, as though that equated with, you know, productivity and quality writing. And by the way, just last, I know Tom has a question he's poised to ask. You know, I think some of this, you know, because the other side of this conversation, David, things like, you know, guaranteed income and so on and so forth, it's just one of these days we're going to have to put together a roundtable, because some of these are just so, these issues are so big, so many implications. And there are a number of people we need to have around the table to come at this from different perspectives. So one of these days, we obviously have to talk about that.
Let's do it.
Our guest is David Foote. He's chief analyst and co-founder of Foote Partners. David, what are today's most in-demand jobs? Or is it more about skills than jobs these days, since the gig economy has become so popular?
Well, there's no doubt about the fact that there has been this great resignation going on. You've probably done shows about it. There's been this massive movement of people out of companies to other places. But at the same time, the number of new business starts has skyrocketed since the pandemic started. So, you know, big tech workers have been jumping to smaller companies. You know, a lot of people have been jumping to their own companies, you know, starting up new businesses and things. But I think, let me answer it in the following way. I think a lot of the hot jobs are, then we're going to talk about skills a little bit, but let me talk about jobs. Some of the really hot jobs are software engineers, you know, full stack, front end, you know, web, UX designers in web design and UX testing skills too, as I mentioned before, UX designers with those skills, data science specialists with TensorFlow, data visualization, statistical modeling skills, AI, ML engineers and specialists, particularly on in Python, you know, the Google TensorFlow, you know, Python, Google platform, Amazon Web Services, you know, C++ performers. I think a lot of digital marketing pros, digital content creators are hot jobs. Now, we have an interesting list that we have, because we hear of companies all the time that call us and say, we have no choice but to raise the pay immediately by between 15 to 30% immediately for some of our workers, just to keep them from thinking about leaving. That's an amazing statement. to take a number of workers, large swaths of workers, and simply give them 15 to 30% raises. So we're looking at two lists we've been compiling on where the biggest increases for companies that, again, have been caught a little short pay-wise and then have to do amazing things to bring their pay to a market level. Those areas are AI machine learning, you know, AI machine learning engineers, a number of cloud jobs, DevOps and DevSecOps, full stack developers, particularly with specific, you know, specialty skills, network architects, a lot of product owners for various tech projects, security engineers and architects, and SRE engineers, site reliability engineers. Those are the highest increases. The next level down, which would not get the 25 to 30% in those cases, but might get 10 to 15%, are a whole number of application developers, just a very large group of application developers, business intelligence jobs, data analytics jobs, functional product owners, some infrastructure jobs, I think, and somewhere in the network area in particular. Security vulnerability assessment, incident response people, software engineers in some areas, not all. I've mentioned that before. UX, UI, you know, UX designers, UX researchers, and web developers. And then there's a list of jobs we're compiling where we're not seeing any movement in salary at all. There are no increases being offered. But companies, these are really large companies that you would know, all of you would know. I can't mention their names, but they're finding that they're losing talent aggressively, aggressive actions of predatory companies. And some of those predatory companies are these large tech companies because so many of their workers have left during the pandemic. And in order to get some of that talent back, you know, these 10X engineers, the ones that can do in an hour, they can do the equivalent coding of 10 hours to a normal engineer, or they can do the work of 10 engineers. You know, to get these people right back, you have to do extraordinary things. And some of it is money, but mm-hmm. some of it is other things. Companies, by the way, are doing equity sharing. They're giving stock now as part of their short-term incentive plans. And they're doing it to workers who have never gotten stock before. They're driving, you know, stock ownership down to levels well below management level. And that's something that has caught a lot of companies off guard because they have absolutely no experience doing that. They've never even thought about stock ownership at lower levels in their company, but they are now if they want to compete.
You know, Dave, it's funny. The very first time I heard the term great resignation, I imagined this very loud, thunderous sigh. But in any case, obviously it's a different kind of resignation. You know, not all companies are able for a number of reasons, a conservative business culture, et cetera, to experiment with, let alone implement, some of the more innovative technologies or methodologies you're discussing here today or that you recommend in your reports. What would you recommend to people from these companies who would like to do some of these things? What are the more modest things that they can do to move the needle?
Well, I think I should probably address this question in two ways. One is for executives and managers who are listening in today, and then also for rank and file people who are being managed by these people. I think you know, there's always this idea that you need to add another certification or another skill to your tool belt. And I wouldn't disagree with that because we do publish on a regular basis through our IT skills and certification pay index, which measures the cash market value of individual skills, certified and non-certified. And we're always tracking what are the highest paying, what are the ones that are growing the most, you know, where is the market, you know, driving pay for skills. It tells us a lot about what's important to companies right now is what kind of skills are they trying to acquire? What kind of people are they trying to acquire? But the way I'm going to answer this question for the rank and file is I think they should be focusing on their soft skills a lot more than necessarily adding certifications and skills, because this idea of soft skills, it's invading almost every job right now. We hear this constantly from employers. Is they're looking for people who can translate technology, you know, cybersecurity people who can translate technology risk to business risk, who can think business and learn business speak, who understand their industry, who are able to present high level concepts coherently and succinctly to a non-technical audience. You know, they want a lot of marketing and expertise in their cybersecurity workers. The list goes on and on. I don't want to talk too much about cybersecurity, but in general, when I think of some of the softer skills you need to be able to build relationships. You need to be creative in your thinking. You need to be flexible. I mean, really flexible and agile. You need to be able to learn and then unlearn. That's the thing about engineers is they have difficult unlearning things because they're so focused in how they've been educated that it's very difficult for them to process failures. Much easier now. The boomers had a lot of trouble with that. I think the millennials have less trouble with that because they're more used to you know, moving very, very fast, and they're very flexible and very agile, and they're really great at working in teams and using digital technology to further that. I think having a strategic perspective is important on any kind of job, and just ability to communicate is really important. Even speaking other languages can help too, not just in an English speaking world.
Yeah, interesting.
And but then for executives, I'd say, look, you need to be making quicker hiring decisions. Stasis and committee decision-making will lose your good hires. You need to reduce the number of interviews, two or three at the most. You need to use multiple approaches to screening candidates. Be very careful about using AI software tools, which eliminate good candidates. You know, embrace the hybrid workplace model. It's going to be here for a long time. Resist any urge to be inflexible about work locations when you're talking to people. They may not want to go into the office. You may have to give them 100% at home privileges. And also lack of role clarity. It's about more than lists of skills and targeted qualifications. There's all kinds of, again, with soft skills in particular, you need to be putting an accent on. And I think also when you hire these people, you know, celebrate non-traditional backgrounds, alternate points of view, creative problem solving, set your talent up to succeed by enabling speed, flexibility, collaboration across multiple disciplines, and do everything you can to boost intra and cross team collaboration, you know, for clever pairing of talent with powerful skill combinations. You have to really pay attention to not just the job, but the people who are in it, because, again, they bring their personality. They bring all kinds of things their parents taught them and their brothers and sisters and their friends along the way. And we've learned this in the pandemic. If you look at studies of teams that did really well remotely and those that didn't, the results, the findings are stunning, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
So it's true.
Yeah. Yeah. No, all seems to me implementable things, the policy level, et cetera. So. Yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah. I just have about a minute left, David. I know you're heading to the TR show to present. And can you give our listeners a little bit of a sneak preview? I'm sure some of it is what we've chatted about today, but anything else you'll be touching on?
Well, this is not an IT audience. You know, it's a business audience, and it's specifically an HR audience. It's specifically compensation, benefits, total rewards. So I'm going to have to distill some highly technical things that we've talked about today in a language that they can understand. Now, I worked in HR before I was ever a Gartner analyst. And, you know, it's a weird career path, but that's, I think, why our company is so successful and why the model we built here works, is that we think of everything from the perspective of, well, what would a business person think and what would they need to understand to get this? What would a technology person need to how would we present that to a technology person? And then how would we present that to an HR person? Mm-hmm. Because it, you know, again, we focus just on, the IT workforce and labor. And so I will put myself in their shoes and talk to them as if I were an HR person and I needed to be able to quickly understand something very, very technical. So I'll be presenting in a very different way, but talking about it. A lot of the things we talked about today, it's just I'll be using a different language. I'll be using their language.
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Well, David, we really appreciate your time today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was always great to be with you guys.
David Foote is chief analyst and co-founder of Foote Partners. He spoke to us today from Black Rock, Connecticut. This is Work in Progress. Back in a moment.
On roof.
Data, the mantra of business today. It's nothing new to World at Work. It's no small feat that they've been collecting data on salary issues for its salary budget survey for more than 45 years. Think about it. 45 years. Curious to know how your company stacks up? HR execs in the know rely on World at Work's salary budget survey. Shouldn't you too? Go to worldatwork.org/salarybudgetsurvey to learn more.
Things up now on Work in Progress, along with Charles Epstein. I'm Tom Alexander. David Foote, Charles, comes as advertised. Just a bevy of info.
Yes, a cornucopia of information and fun facts. And any one of those questions, those answers, we could pretty much have a whole podcast on them. And that's not getting into, I think I referred to his rockin'torial skills. We didn't even get into, you know, the story hour with David, but, you know, we kept it pretty much on track. So that was good. But all seriousness, a lot of very interesting things. I was particularly interested when we were asking him about to name two or three technologies. So it's not so much an isolated technology, but, you know, technology clusters, that are really important. And, you know, I was curious to know, because anybody who knows David knows that, part of what he does is travel the world and speaks to people so he can get firsthand insight what people around the world are doing vis-a-vis technology, what the hot skills are today and tomorrow. But, you know, just like everybody, you gotta, make do with Zoom. You gotta figure out, how to do business on Zoom and glean the information you can. And as he said, you know, they've always been a virtual business. So obviously he was able to make that transition. And, you know, and speaking of, he's talking about how COVID, you know, was a real opportunity for some good leaders to show their chops. If you're a good leader, you're able to use this to your advantage and use it as a period of experimentation and innovation and show agility. And if you're not a terribly forward thinking leader, you just got overwhelmed and unfortunately your company suffered the results.
That's very true. Just a reminder too, to our listeners who may be attending the TR show in Phoenix, October 4th through the 6th, David will be there and he'll be speaking to those in attendance. So keep an eye out for David Foote. We thank you.
Definitely. Yeah. So I know, he's going to be giving a presentation. I think he's going to be giving an on-site and a virtual presentation. And, you know, it's the last thing, which I thought was very interesting because it's something he and I had spoken about before we actually had him on. And, you know, there are a lot of companies out there. I mean, you know, sort of the old 80-20 rule, you know, 20% of companies out there have the capabilities, they have the resources, their culture is such where, you know, they can experiment. They have more bandwidth, more freedom to incorporate some of these things. Some don't, actually quite a few don't. And so what kind of recommendations could you make there where people are going to, in a more incremental, measured way, incorporate some of these things? And I thought he had some very interesting things to say there, because a lot of it comes down, you know, to changing your policy, changing your orientation, changing your outlook, where you can incorporate some of these things, again, in an incremental way, show some good results. And then, of course, rinse and repeat. So I thought that was a very interesting and important part of the conversation. So again, that was a third time. Third time is the charm. I think that's what he said. And I'm sure we'll have him on yet again. So thanks, David.
Yeah, big thanks to David Foote for joining us today on Work in Progress. For Charles Epstein, I'm Tom Alexander. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you again next time right here on Work in Progress. So long, everybody.
This has been Work in Progress, a World at Work podcast about work, life, and everything in between, with award-winning radio host Tom Alexander and Workspan's Not Safe for Work columnist Charles Epstein. For more, visit worldatwork.org/workinprogress. That's worldatwork.org/workinprogress. Join us next week for a another edition of Work in Progress.